एवं जन्मानि कर्माणि ह्यकारतुर अजनस्य च वर्णयन्ति स्म कवयो वेदगुह्यानि हृत्पथे. Describe the birth and activities of the unborn and inactive, which is undiscoverable even in the Vedic literatures. He is the Lord of the heart, purport by His divine grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Both the Lord and the living entities are essentially all spiritual. Therefore, both of them are eternal, and neither of them has birth and death. The difference is that the so-called births and disappearances of the Lord are unlike those of the living beings. The living beings who take birth and then again accept death are bound by the laws of material nature. But the so-called appearance and disappearance of the Lord are not actions of material nature, but are demonstrations of the internal potency of the Lord. They are described by the great sages for the purpose of self-realization. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita by the Lord that his so-called birth in the material world and his activities are all transcendental. And simply by meditation on such activities, one can attain realization of Brahman and thus become liberated from material bondage. In the Shrutis, it is said that the birthless appears to take birth. The Supreme has nothing to do, but because He is omnipotent, everything is performed by Him naturally, as if done automatically. As a matter of fact, the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His different activities are all confidential, even to the Vedic literatures. Yet they are displayed by the Lord to bestow mercy upon the conditioned souls. We should always take advantage of the narrations of the activities of the Lord, which are meditations on Brahman in the most convenient and palatable form. Om Ajnanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Milit. Learned men describe the birth and activities of the unborn and inactive, which is undiscoverable even in the Vedic literatures. He is the Lord of the heart. Na shato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate shata. Ubhayor api tristontas anayos matatarashmat. Natve baham jato nasvam natvam ne me janaripa. Nachayva nababishyava saravivaya matapa. As it is being described here, that the eternal truth is that understanding and realization that for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and for each of His parts and parcels, the living entities, there is no beginning and there is no end. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. Krishna has expanded Himself into his multifarious energies. Parashya Shaktir Vivadaiva Shrugate. Specifically, into his marginal energy, the jiva tattva, for the sake of enjoyment. Krishna is Rasaraj. He is the supreme reciprocator of loving exchanges. And everything within existence is simply meant for Krishna to enjoy. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartite. Iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. All material and spiritual creation is emanating from Krishna. He is a source of everything. And it is all only for one pleasure, for one purpose, and that is pleasure. We are all pleasure-seeking. Anandamayobhyashat. It is our constitutional nature. The motivating force of everything we do within our life is in search for pleasure and to avoid those things that interrupt our pleasure, pain. From the time we take birth in this world to the time we die, we are simply seeking pleasure. Why? Because it is our constitutional nature to seek pleasure. Because we are part and parcel of Sri Ram, the reservoir of all pleasure. But because Krishna is the absolute truth, he explains in Gita the science by which every living entity can dive deeply into the ocean of transcendental pleasure. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam kyatva mam shantim rishti. When we understand that we are simply meant for Krishna's enjoyment. When you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished. Our only true satisfaction on the spiritual platform is in making a sacrifice of our whole existence for the pleasure of Krishna. That is why Bhagavatam explains Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje ahoitiki aprati hatajaj atma supraseedati. That the supreme occupation for all humanity is that loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead which is unmotivated and uninterrupted. Only that type of activity, only that disposition of consciousness can bring complete satisfaction to the self. The soul is by nature selfless. The soul's nature is to freely, liberally, and spontaneously give everything to Krishna for Krishna's pleasure, without the slightest concern for one's own existence. To be so immersed in Krishna that we forget that we even exist. We simply remember Krishna. The complete giving of the heart but as long as this ahankar, this false ego covers that true, pure identity then we become greedy, selfish, lusty, and envious, full of anger and illusion. And we begin to think in terms of I and mine, janasya moho yamaham mameti. And that is the source of all bondage and misery. I am this body and mind, and those things in relationship are meant for my enjoyment. And as long as this misconception prevails, we have to continue the cycle of birth and death, dukalayam ashashvatam, and suffer. This is our predicament. But yet, this misconception of false ego is so deeply rooted in the heart. It is like a hard knot, and it is very difficult to disentangle ourselves. In fact, it is impossible. We have no strength, we have no power to untie this knot of material bondage. And it is for this reason that the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears within this material world, to attract our hearts back to His loving service, to perform such wonderful pastimes, and to speak such sublime divine truth that every living being who will simply accept His mercy can find shelter in His lotus feet. Because Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that for one who takes shelter of me, I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Sarvadharaman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja. Aham tvam sarvapapevyo moksha ishami masacha. If we abandon all other conceptions of religion and just surrender to Krishna, Krishna says, I will relieve you of all sinful reactions. And like the brilliant sun dispelling all darkness, He removes all fear from our hearts. Man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yajim nam namaskuru. Mam evaishashi satyam te pratijane priyosh. The process of surrender is given here, to always think of Krishna, to do everything for Krishna, to be His devotee, to offer your homage and respects to Him. In this way, Krishna promises that you will come to me without fail, because Krishna is all attractive. By remembering Krishna, our minds and our hearts are attracted away from the sources of misery of this material existence. Yehi samsparsha cha bhoga dukha jo nayate. And we find real meaning and fulfillment in our life in Krishna consciousness. It is described here that the birth and activities of the unborn and inactive are inconceivable. The unborn is born, and the inactive performs unlimited activities. To the mundane scholar, this is a contradiction which cannot possibly be reconciled. Therefore, Krishna explains, bhaktyamam avijanati yavanyascha smitatvati. You cannot understand. Sometimes superficially, we read these wonderful instructions, and on a very mental, semi-intellectual platform, we think, yes, I understand. And we can explain it with certain analogies of how it is so. But actually, we cannot understand with our mind, and we cannot understand with our intelligence. Our explanations, essentially, are so much word jugglery, trying to describe it by grammatical process. But when you go deep into your own heart and you really ponder and contemplate of what's being said, this is very important. A Vaishnava is supposed to be introspective. When we read the scriptures, when we hear the words of our spiritual master, we are not simply meant to just superficially hear and say, yes, I agree, it must be so. That should be done. But beyond that, we should actually very, very deeply try to understand what is being said. And the more you try, the more you realize you really cannot understand. How can the unborn be born? And how can the inactive be active? The realization of this and the true understanding can only take place when Krishna reveals to you the truth by being pleased upon your humility and your devotion. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has declared the topmost of all philosophy of the Vedas to be achintya veda abheda tattva. Achintya means inconceivable. We can describe that like the sun and the ray, we are qualitatively one, but quantitatively different. So we are simultaneously one and different. Anyone can say that. A child can say that. Then why Mahaprabhu has said achintya, inconceivably? Because we can say it, and we could think it, but do we understand it? We cannot. It's inconceivable. Until Krishna bestows his causeless mercy upon us and reveals it within our heart. Bhaktya tvananiya shakya aham evam vidorajana jnanam jastam tattvena praveshtam chaparantava. And this only takes place through bhakti. When we engage in the process of devotional service, put aside our own false hopes that through our intelligence, our abilities, our austerities, or anything else that we can understand Krishna, then Krishna reveals the truth from within by his mercy. Anyabhilashita sunyam jnana karamanyakam anukulyena Krishna nusilanam bhaktaruta. That the highest truth of pure bhakti is awakened within our heart when we give up all egoistic attempts to understand the truth and just surrender to Krishna. Just as in the Braj Leela, the Brahmins, who were very learned, great knowers of the Vedas, they were proud. They were thinking that by their ritual, by their chanting of mantras, by their deep understanding of Veda, that they would understand the higher truths and that they would do great seva, great work for humanity. But because they were so much attached to their own ways, in their own positions as Brahmins, when the absolute truth came right before them, and offered them the perfection of life, direct, loving, devotional service, they could not see it. They could not understand it. They rejected it. And yet their wives, who were not Vedic scholars, nor were they famous, prestigious gurus like their husbands, they were simple housewives. Cooking, cleaning, taking care of babies. But yet, because they had simple and pure hearts, because they had humility and a desire to serve, they had bhakti. They were instantly given the direct darshan of Sri Krishna, the source of everything. And they were given the opportunity to engage in his loving service, the perfection of life. By pleasing Krishna, we can understand Krishna. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati kutampi. Bhaktosi, that by pleasing the devotee, we please Krishna. This is the secret which the Vaishnavas have, which is not revealed to any other religion or any other spiritual process. By becoming the servant of the servant of the servant and making our life an offering in this way, Krishna becomes most pleased and satisfied to reveal everything to our lives. And this is all that is required. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Remuna with his devotees, he was describing the unlimited glories of Madhavendra Puri, his Param Guru. And Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu explained in herein that the Vedas are so unfathomable, with so many apparent contradictions, that no one, by any amount of scholarship, study, austerities, by any other process of purification, can understand the essence of what the Vedas are trying to give us. It is a secret. Krishna explains, it is the most confidential knowledge. The real purport of all the Vedas can only be revealed through the heart of a pure Vaishnava. Through his words and through his activities, the real essence and purport of Vedas is revealed. And only by receiving the grace of such a Vaishnava can we understand. So Krishna says in Gita, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvata tyaktva deham punara janma naiti mam eti swarja. That one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world never has to take birth in this world again, but attains my eternal abode. But in that same fourth chapter, he explains how the only way and means by which we can understand the transcendental nature of the appearance of and the actions of the Lord. Tadvadi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshandite jnanam jnaninastvata darshan. You must approach Gurudev and you must inquire submissively. Inquire submissively means to put aside all our predisposed ideas of reality, of who we are or where we're going. We must submit ourselves. To surrender, to submit, means to let go. To let go of our own egoistic attachments, mentally and physically and intellectually. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was the greatest scholar in all of the world. And his Guru Maharaj, Srila Gaura Kishora Das Babaji, by all material intellectual standards, he was considered to be an illiterate. He did not read, he did not write properly. But yet Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was inquiring from him submissively as if he knew nothing, although he had already studied all the Bhakti Shastras and the Vedas, the son of Thakur Bhakti Vinod. And Gaura Kishora tried, he sent him home. You are such a learned scholar and such a great orator. And I am nothing. How can you learn from me? It is shameless. But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati He explained that whatever I have learned, whatever I know, it is all irrelevant to Krishna consciousness unless I submissively hear from you. And Sanatan Goswami, he was also such a great and learned scholar. But when he came before Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu, he presented himself as fool number one. He explained, I am such a fool that yes, I may know so many languages and I may be able to speak on so many scriptures, but I don't really know who I am, where I'm coming from, where I'm going, what the purpose of life is. So what is the use? All knowledge is like so many zeros. You could know hundreds and thousands and millions of slokas, and you can memorize scripture after scripture after scripture, and you can be able to present them meticulously. It is like so many zeros. If you have a billion zeros or a quadrillion zeros at the time of death, it all adds up to one big, as Prabhupada said, jiddo. But if you put one in front of zeros, everything increases. And what is that one? That one is the humble desire to be the servant of the servant of the servant. When you have that submissive, humble spirit and a desire to serve, that one increases the value. Then whatever you learn in your life or whatever you know, it can be engaged properly in Krishna's service, and it is accepted by Krishna. And when Krishna accepts it, that is the process of spiritual advancement. You can do something so wonderfully, but if Krishna does not accept it, it's useless. So Sanatan Goswami presented himself in this way, that I actually know nothing. And I am such a fool that people around are bowing down and glorifying me, and I believe them. That is how abominable I am. I believe them. This is how a Vaishnava should feel. Sometimes when we go out preaching, people glorify us. They want to touch your lotus feet and place the dust upon the top of their heads. And they stand in line to offer you garlands and pranams. And sometimes they even chant your holy names. And sometimes they want to give gifts, and they make big, beautiful, wonderful feasts of prasad just for you. And they want to learn from you and study under you. So many ways that they are glorifying you. And if you believe them, then you are abominable by the definition of Sanatan Goswami. We should not believe them. We should understand that our eternal position is to feel like a great fool before our Guru and Krishna. And if we have that consciousness of humility, then the previous acharyas can reveal themselves through us into the world. Otherwise, we can learn so much and we can present ourselves. We can present our realization of Krishna. which really doesn't amount to much of anything. But if we truly become humble servants, instruments, and understand that whatever I have, it is all zeros, it can't really do much good for anybody unless performed in a spirit of menial, humble servants. In that consciousness, we open our hearts so that the grace of all the previous acharyas can flow through our lives in everything we think, everything we do, and everything we say. And through this process, we can actually do real service for humanity. And we can actually please Krishna. So Krishna explains, Thadvati pranipatina pari prashnena sevaya. We must offer our obeisances to Gurudev. And then we must inquire submissively. I do not know. I think I know. The fact that I think I know means I really don't know. When you know that you don't know, you know something. But when you know that you know something, you know nothing. This is spiritual geometry. And what we hear, we must apply to our life. That is sevaya. We must be the servant. Through this process, the great Vaishnavas, they revealed the truth. And what is that truth? That truth is, Krishna says, that we are all part and parcel of Krishna. We are in him and we are his property. We are simply meant for Krishna's enjoyment. And everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Nothing is mine. And when we really come to this platform of consciousness, then janma karma chime divyam evam yo veti tattvata tyaktva deham bhunara janma naiti mamiti sura. Then we can truly understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's activities and his birth in this world. Then there is no more birth or death. So as a service, as a humble service, we must carefully study the scriptures and the books of the previous acharyas. And through humble service, the words of those teachings are revealed to us through realization. Without realization, all intellectual knowledge are like decorations on a dead body. And this movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a movement of depth and substance. It is not a movement of superficial religiosity. It is not a movement of just going around beating people over the heads with doctrine and saying, I am better than you because I am a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Because that's what every religion does. It is a movement which is meant to bring about the deep realizations of our eternal loving relationships with Radha and Krishna. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as he is revealed through Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Sri Chaitanya Mangala, these great biographies have revealed to the world how the devotees of Lord Gauranga go deeply into the depths of the Vedic Siddhanta. Through humility, through service and respect to the Vaishnavas, through being willing to do anything to serve the Lord's mission. Chautha Haridas, he was a young renunciate. And he made a slight mistake, a mistake that probably every one of us perform many times every day. He performed this mistake once in his life. He simply looked upon an old woman who happened to be a pure Vaishnavi. And it is sometimes said that he looked upon her in a way that was not correct. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for this slight, and some people feel that he didn't even do that. He just looked. There are so many interpretations, but anyway, whatever it was just lasted 1 second. Huh? He was just begging rice. And he was begging rice for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What was his name? Bhagavan Acharya. He was on his order. Bhagavan Acharya said, go to Madhavi, she has first class white rice. Get that, because I'm cooking for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu today. So Chautha Haridas went on the order. Mataji, please give me some white rice. And he happened to see her. What to do? And he brought back the white rice. Some say there was someone else. Anyway, but Mahaprabhu, he just condemned him. I never want to see the face of this cheater again. He cast him away from him. But yet Chautha Haridas, he went even to the extreme of fasting to atone for his offense, and even going to Prayag, the confluence of Jamuna, Ganga, and Saraswati, and ending his life after a whole long year of miserably bearing separation from the Lord with an utterly broken heart. But he did it because he knew that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, within his mission, he wanted to establish the purity and the sanctity that he expected of his devotees. And to help him to establish that principle, he was willing to undergo such incredible depths of pain and even end his own life. But the proof that really he was absolutely pure is after he left his body, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him a spiritual form as a Gandharva who would come to Mahaprabhu in secret and sing to him and give him pleasure. So really, there was no fault in Chautha Haridas. But he was willing to accept such a terribly painful condition in life and in death, because it was the Lord's desire. If the Lord wants to use me in this way, I'll never give up his lotus feet. My life belongs to him. He can do anything, whatever he wants. Ashlesya va padara pampanashtumam adarshana maramahatam karotu va yata tadata vidlatu lampato mat prananatastu sevana paraha. My Lord, I am yours. You can do anything you like with me. If you like, you can embrace me, or you can trample upon me, or you can make me brokenhearted by not being present before you. But I am your servant birth after birth, unconditionally. You can do anything. That is the quality of the surrender of each and every one of the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nityananda Prabhu was a great renunciate. He was avadhut. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him to get married. So he married. Whatever you want, my lord. Lokanath Goswami, he was an associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip. And when Mahaprabhu decided to take sannyas, he knew that it would break Lokanath Maharaj's heart. So he said, you should go to Vrindavan. You should not be here when I leave Navadvip to take sannyas. You wait there. I will meet you there. You prepare a nice place for me to live. So in those days, you know, there was no Indian Airlines or Indian Railways or Metropolitan or buses. By Krishna's grace, he walked to Vrindavan from Navadvip. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, after he took sannyas in Katwa from Sri Keshav Bharati Maharaj, he actually was on his way to Vrindavan. He was running to Vrindavan. But now, no more wife, no more mother, no more anything, only Krishna. But as he was running to Vrindavan from Gaya, where he... Nityananda Prabhu, he tricked him to come back to Navadvip, Shantipur. Sachi Mata requested that he go to Jagannath Puri. So this news reached Lokanath Maharaj that he's not coming to Vrindavan. He's living in Jagannath Puri. And then he heard the news that not only was he not coming to Vrindavan, but he just went the opposite direction. He's walking throughout all of South India, looking for his brother and delivering everyone by giving them the chanting of the holy names.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, 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 Hare Hare.
So Lokanath Goswami was thinking, and that what is the use of Vrindavan without Mahaprabhu? So he left, and he started walking rapidly all the way down to the southernmost part of India. And then he heard that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's already been traveling for several years, and he's returned to Jagannath Puri. So Lokanath Maharaj walked all the way to Jagannath Puri. And when he was just about to reach Jagannath Puri, he heard the news that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has left for Vrindavan. I'm supposed to meet him there. I'm supposed to have a nice place ready for him. So he started going to Vrindavan. Walking, 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 perhaps running. And when he reached Vrindavan, he received the news that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has just been here. He traveled through all the 12 forests, and he's left. Now he's in Prayag. So he decided in the next morning, I will go to Prayag. But that night, as he was resting, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu appeared to him in a divine vision. And he said, Lokanath Prabhu, you stay in Vrindavan. I want you to stay in Vrindavan. Soon Rupan Sanatan, Raghunath Das, Gopal Bhatta, Raghunath Bhatta, Jiva Goswami, they will all be coming. I want you to do that mission along, to execute my mission in their association. So Lokanath Maharaj never in the physical sense saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the rest of his life. He never left Vrindavan because Mahaprabhu ordered him to stay, and Mahaprabhu never came back. Although they grew up together, they were intimate friends from childhood. Willing and ready to endure any pain within their own hearts if it will assist the Lord in his mission, if it will please the Lord. This is an example of making me brokenhearted by not being present before me. What does Guru want? What does Krishna want? That should be our concern in life. We may want to dovetail our propensities, but a higher level than that is to simply please Krishna, simply please the Vaishnavas. I remember just recently after the New York Ratha Yatra, one of Srila Prabhupada's very close associates and disciples of years past, his name was Bali Maradan. And he was at the Ratha Yatra this year. And he revealed something which was very historical. Just a few months back, he happened to have Prabhupada's two original diaries, the one from the Jaladutta and the one from before and after his travel on the Jaladutta. The one after, I'm sorry, when he first came to America. He had the original documents. The diary from the Jaladutta, many have seen some of the writings from, but the other one, no one has ever seen. It's a thick diary. It's almost a year of his activities, and every day he was taking his notes, doing his writing. And he just happened to have it all these years. And he happened to think that everyone knows about it. But in reality, only he knew about it. Back in 1967 or 69, something like that, Prabhupada gave it to him. He said, keep this for me. So he gave it to one devotee from the Bhaktivedanta archives to photocopy in a very special way. And then he wanted the original returned. He said, when there's some sort of project where I really believe that it will be taken proper care of and it will really be beneficial for the public, then I will give these two diaries. But until then, you can photocopy it and return it to me. So that devotee from the Bhaktivedanta archives happens to be a nice friend of mine for many years. So I was sitting in the lobby of the temple in New York, and he gave me these two original diaries of Srila Prabhupada to see. And I was reading it. Prabhupada's diary during the first several, during when he was in Butler, Pennsylvania. Soon I will be, today I am going to speak at the Lions Club, and he's explaining all these things. And when he first came to New York, and there was one particular passage. First of all, he was explaining in his diary all of his different preaching programs. He'd say, at first he was at this Dr. Mishra's ashram, and he was explaining how Dr. Mishra does not like what I say. So then he just started having programs at somebody's little apartment. Somebody invited him to live in his apartment. And he said, today was big crowd, 5 people. Today 5 people came, and I spoke from Bhagavad Gita, and we had kirtan, and I prepared prasad, and they liked prasad very much. Especially they liked kachoris very much. He said, now I am convinced that Americans like prasad. Things like this. Today, and then gradually it was growing, and Prabhupada was becoming ecstatic. 15 people came. He would say, he would even write down their names, who they were, and how they liked it. Prabhupada, he was so happy if anybody came. And accepted Krishna consciousness from him. But then this one passage was written. He wrote that today is Gaur Purnima, the appearance day of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in Vrindavan and in Mayapur Dhams, all of my god brothers are together having big festivals, worshiping the deities, having a wonderful celebration. But on this day, I am all alone with no association of a single devotee. Said, but I am very happy to be in this situation because it is the desire of my spiritual master to spread the glories of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement in the Western world. So this is an example of a devotee who is willing to undergo any sort of tribulation in his own life, if that is what is required to be a part of pleasing the heart of Guru and Krishna. In that diary, there's also a section where the first day he moves in 26 Second Avenue, he says, today I have moved into a little storefront. The address is 26 Second Avenue. He's explaining what it looks like. The landlord is a nice man, he said, he is a gentleman. In fact, for those who want to see, that night, that was in the morning, I was reading the diary for hours, and that night I was asked to give lecture and lead kirtan for the Sunday feast at Radha Govindaji Temple in New York. And afterward, Bali Murdan Prabhu came up to me and he said, I'm so happy to see you again, I just wanted to give you this. And it was an envelope. And I opened the envelope and it was a photocopy of that particular page where Prabhupada's explaining how he was feeling such separation from all of his god brothers during the wonderful festival of Gaur Purnima and how he was alone without any association of devotees. But how he was so grateful to have this service for his spiritual master. So those who want to see it, we can. So this is the process. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has revealed of how we can truly understand the transcendental nature of the birth and the activities of Krishna. By hearing from such great souls and by serving such great souls. Krishna becomes so pleased upon us that he reveals himself to us from within our hearts. Krishna is not bound or subjected to any rules or regulations. He reveals himself according to his own sweet will. And there is no other way. So tomorrow we are celebrating Janmashtami. And today the festivities are beginning. We should, in whatever seva, in whatever bhajan or sadhana we perform, we should do it in this mood. We should know that we can chant lakhs and lakhs of names of the Lord every day for many, many lifetimes and never attain a drop of devotion, real devotion, unless we do it in the proper spirit of pleasing Guru, pleasing the Vaishnavas, and pleasing Krishna with humility and devotion and willingness to serve. So in whatever we do during the next days, whether we are making garlands, or whether we are helping with the cooking, or whether we are preaching to the guests, or whether we are managing matters, or whether we are having kirtan, or whether we are cleaning or setting up displays, whatever we may do, we should know the real meaning of Janmashtami is to welcome Krishna in our hearts and in our lives by this humble attitude of being a menial servant of the servant and chanting his holy names in this spirit. Questions?
Regarding, you were explaining how Chota Haridas wanted to establish the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and how strict the standard should be followed. So how do we apply it in practice in terms of when we have to collect or when we have to preach, or what is the borderline? Like, what is the practical application? Sometimes we go a little too much thinking that we have to help others, and in the process we sacrifice our own high standards.
You should very carefully have very strong association with your brahmachari god brothers. That is essential. If there is a strong bond of loving relationship amongst the brahmacharis, that bond will protect them from the influence of Maya. It is very important. You should be very strict in your sadhana. You should develop very humble, serving, loving relationships with other brahmacharis. It is essential. And when you are performing your duties, you must be very, very careful. And remember that Krishna is in your heart. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in your heart. He's watching. And we should not perform any duty in a way that we are utilizing that facility for our own sense gratification. We must be very careful. We are doing it as a sacrifice for Krishna. We should not be go beyond what is absolutely necessary in situations like that. And we should not in any way, we should be very much observing that as soon as you start trying to enjoy any situation for your own sense gratification, then it is the beginning of a fall down. So you must escape that situation. And if you have strong sadhana and strong sangam, association with others in the renounced order, then you will naturally always have that good intelligence to discriminate. But if your sadhana is weak and your satsang with other brahmacharis and sannyasis is weak, then you will not have the intelligence to be able to discriminate at the time of need. And Maya will steal away your proper intelligence. Once you start to try to enjoy material nature in that way, through your senses, the impression goes deep in your heart and in your mind. It becomes very difficult to get it out. Is there any other questions?
Thing. Anything that is done on our endeavor, it becomes many zeros. And at the end, it remains a zero. So, the one that is added by the compassion of a pure devotee, if he is pleased. So, spiritual life, it seems therefore that it doesn't even start unless one receives compassion from a pure devotee. What happens to the preaching? The devotee is, everyone is preaching now. Does that compassion gets delivered through the preachers who are preaching for the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu?
We should never think we have compassion. Are you compassionate?
I am seeking compassion from others.
We should never think we are compassionate. Rather, we should think that I am the messenger of one who is compassionate. And we should deliver that compassion to others by repeating their words and acting as they, in such a way that is pleasing to them. Prabhupada said that a preacher is like a postal peon. That means he, in all humility, on the order of Guru Maharaj and the great Vaishnavas, on their order, we are very humbly delivering the message. Now, we may deliver it very powerfully. Srila Prabhupada was so humble, just delivering the message of his Guru. Like a postal peon, he said, but yet how forceful. When someone came with Darwinian arguments, he said, I kick his face with boot. You rascal! You have heard him say like this. Is that the activities of someone very humble? Yes, definitely. Because that was the method required according to time and circumstance to deliver the message. Arjuna was very humble as he was shooting arrows through everyone's bodies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because that was his service. But we never do it for our own aggrandizement. We never do it according to the way we think we should do it. We simply do it according to the will of the higher authorities, according to our, to those who we are receiving our blessings and instructions from. So we want to be messengers of compassion. And by the process of being a messenger of the compassionate ones, we become compassionate, truly compassionate. And if we have no compassion, that's all right. Just let the compassionate great souls use your energies like a puppet to do their work. Any other questions?